Bless her. Bless all of you. Bless me.
This is 90.7 FM WGXC Accra, Hudson, Catskill, the station that everyone loves.
Altogether Now listens for feedback from the public. Anyone who wants to leave a public comment can call 518-291-9492 and leave an audio message up to 3 minutes with any sort of opinion about something you heard on All Together Now. You can also send emails to info@wgxc.org with opinions about what you hear here.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
Good afternoon, comrades. You are in tune to WGXC 90.7 FM, and this is the Poet Radio Show, version August 2018, and this afternoon we are privileged to have a local poet and artist in the studio, Don Breeze, who has just published a new book called Breath 40 Times. Now, Dawn Breeze is a wearer of many artistic hats. She's a visual artist, and she runs an art space in Germantown. She'll talk about all these things in a little while. She did a magnificent interactive geolocative work at Olana. But here on the program today to celebrate the publication of this book of poems. And, yeah. So, Dawn, welcome.
Thanks, Chris. I'm super excited to be here.
Well, we're super excited to see this book. And I don't know if you want to say anything about it before jumping into a reading of some poems. Or, I mean, how will you introduce the book? Tell us about how it came to be.
Sure. So the book came to be because I started writing pretty, I would say vaguely, in the sense that without direction, about 2 years ago, and started compiling lots and lots of writing. And the writing was, some of it would be considered poetry, and some of it would probably be leaning more towards a prose narrative or the personal essay. And after compiling a bunch and starting to look at it and looking at the threads and the connections, it started to take the form of a book. And then in that first iteration, I would say this book was buried within that in small fragments. And I decided to pull them out, thinking about a submission possibly, and ended up creating this little book here. And then, to be really honest, this is the first book of writing that I've compiled. And I was thinking about, since I come from more of a background as an artist initially, we operate in somewhat different ways as far as sharing our work. And it occurred to me that no one could see the work I had been doing for a couple of years or knew about it, and no one really knew that I was writing at all in general and had heard my voice at all. And that submissions, it was normal to submit something. I learned for a 7-month waiting period, and in that time you might not be able to share it with anyone else, even in submissions. And then you might find out that you didn't get it. And then, you know, I guess you'd submit again. And that actually bummed me out. And I felt that I had something to share. And I guess went a little in the more rogue direction and sort of thinking about artists and Lucy Lippert and her penchant for the artist books and being able to self-publish and share work. So that's how the book came about. And I was lucky enough to have met the designer the year before, Calvin Rocio, and I sent him the copy and the photographs. I sent him basically his book and I said, can you help me? What do you think about this? And he was very eager and excited to work on it with me. So that was really what allowed it to happen. And then he, as a designer with words, was really able to help me give it its form and help me bring it into being. And so here's this little book. And yeah, it's really delightful to, I have to say, to hold it in my hands and to be able to share it. So,
well, the book does have a prominent visual identity to it. Not only the graphics on the cover, but there are photographs in it. There are shaped poems, so that's good. And, you know, this program has no problem with the DIY poetry approach at all. And, you know, I think if you look back through history, there are plenty of good books that were published not from some major publisher, even small publisher. And maybe some point years ago, there could be some stigma toward Vanity Press or whatever you want to call it. But I think that's totally ludicrous, personally, right? Especially if we have these services that allow us to, we have the technology in our hands. Why do you need to wait 7 months to publish your book and possibly not publish your book? That's silly. So that shows a type of passion, I would say, to make this happen. And it really, being an expressive person in whatever genre, it is about getting things out there. Of course, we have to put bread on the table, and this and there are some practical concerns with regard to life. But ultimately, you want people to see the poems. You want you've done this work, hard work, impressive work. And yeah, you could make a web page, but there's nothing like having a book of poems, right?
Yeah, nothing like a book.
Very good. So with that, it's a good intro. Why don't you launch in? After a while, we'll talk a little bit. I've loved reading the book, and it's interesting to see what you pull out of it on the air.
Great. Well, I want to also say that I really appreciated you having pre-read the book and also the poems that you noted as being ones that you might like to hear. And I was mentioning to you earlier why I appreciated that, because in fact, I chose all the poems that were in the book, right?
Yeah, it's true.
So like, it wouldn't really necessarily matter which ones I wanted to read or not, since I did choose every poem. And reading the ones that you had highlighted to share today was a really nice experience for me. And it reminded me, as I mentioned also, that it reminded me of when you're working with a curator and you have an opportunity to see your work in a new way and in a new relationship, just via the editing process and the way something is next to each other. So I enjoyed seeing these poems today in a new way. And that also goes back to how exciting it is for me to be able to share this book, because it then creates a continued conversation and a whole other entity of iterations of creations. And so I really like that. And I'll say that with that, some of the poems that I'll read today are poems that I haven't read out loud to people before. So I guess everyone who might listen, just bear that in mind.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right, so I'll start with a poem called Father. The original thaumaturge, a suffering theopathetic. He been toed and tawed, passed down with tetter and Teutonic blood. Which is more thanatoid, him or the archetype, a godlike man? Okay. Now I'll read A Recipe for Good Taste.
Did you take two breaths after that poem?
Do I need to take two breaths?
Well, just the next page has breath 13 and breath 14.
Yeah, that's true. Thank you.
Dawn's book is punctuated with breath notations.
Mm-hmm. That are rising and falling. And and it's actually funny because I do need to take breaths. And I hold my breath a lot. And one of the reasons why it is punctuated with breaths is I sort of thought of these poems as being fragmentary and fragments and connected through time and then connected through breath. And even though I hold my breath, eventually, you know, it gives and comes back. And it makes me think about both the things that we really don't have control over. And I think a lot of our histories, we don't actually have control over shaping, and they come in ebb and flow. And I also found that as a way of connecting the fragments.
Mm-hmm. Plus, the way I read it, at least at certain points, was that some of these poems are pretty dramatic, right? And so I had to stop and, you know, catch a breath. I mean, it's for the reader as much as it is the author who's needs to catch her breath.
I love that. And I love that it was useful.
It's and also somewhat unique. I mean, you see, like if you read a teleplay or something, you know, they'll have all these instructions, but you don't always see that in a book of poems.
Well, I actually have some poems that are instructions, not in this one, but I do like that too. That's interesting. I love that. I really love that it was useful, and it makes me think about, you know, when you're in yoga and you know that you're supposed to breathe in and you could do it in silence, but how generous it is to hear someone remind you to breathe and how that really helps to allow you to do it. So, all right. But see, knowing me, I just skip over it anyways. All right, recipe for good taste. Carob will never be chocolate. She lies. This is not the first of many lies that cannot neatly be named a lie, but feel that way. Her carob cakes, an injustice, frosted in some sticky honey BS, a misery to ingest. A sad bite of tasteless crap you think before you are old enough to have the vocabulary that includes crap. You want chocolate. You know other kids eat chocolate, watch TV, and dress up for Halloween. You want to believe you're not going to hell with only one tooth left. You want to believe in popular culture, but you're not sure who's right, the world or your mother. Later came a day you said crap, or maybe it was damn. Either way, it was washed away with a bar of ivory soap fed by your mother's hand. She'd be damned if her child spoke that way.
There's an example of one of the prosier poems, right? Mm-hmm. Right. And also very funny at the beginning, by the way. That's I remember that. I mean, if growing up in at a certain time, a certain age, you know, if your parents, say, were interested in health food, you know, that was pretty tough, right? The health food store was not as good as, like, the soda fountain.
Nope.
Good. And then it's poignant at the end, so you get both.
All right. So this one doesn't have a title. Star formations grow at the roots, below the dark waters, where do you feel grounded?
What's that picture? This is one of the poems that has a picture on it, attached to it, on the page, same page.
Well, that's a picture of quite literally a tree that's growing out of a river in the wintertime. And so around its base, it had been frozen, and all these crystalline structures in the ice were surrounding it. And interestingly, it was in the shadow and also bright, so it was all black at the bottom, even though that was reflecting the sky in the moment. And so one of the things, like, a lot of the pictures that are in here is, I think, like many of us now, I would say I have a daily practice of sort of the mundanity of life, like the things that you see and you take pictures of on Instagram. And I mean, I think of them as poetry, and the way that we see something and the way we see the relationships between them. So there's definitely a relation, you know, a visual.
Well, it's a great photograph. And I'll tell you what, in looking at it myself, I never would have guessed that it was a tree in frozen water. Mm-hmm. I thought it was like a cliff looking down at water breaking on like a rocky shoreline. So, and you took all these pictures.
Yeah.
These are all yours? Mm-hmm. Yeah, very nice. I mean, I'm a fan, obviously, of photography as well as poetry, but I guess it has something to do with the scale of the image or something. Could now that you mention it, of course, I see it, but you know, that's good. That's good to have the non-literal view, too. But that's cool. And you were seeing like maybe like galactic stuff happening in the ice. Is that why the connection was happening there?
And also just the upside downness of it, and how you know, I'm really interested always in perspective, and I think about that actually a lot in the poems that I write, and how you can just pivot a little bit and something can really mean something entirely different, or a form becomes something quite large or small. And so, yeah, I was thinking that. And I was most fascinated when I saw this by that strangeness of the heavens below, and witnessing that. And then, yeah, so it was quite literal, but it is an abstract photograph, as you're saying, and as you see it, and I see it now too in that way. And that also makes me think of, when I love photography, you know, when we get to see very micro and very macro images of things, and the way that, say, we zoom in on something and it becomes a landscape that could be on Mars, or it could be an aerial view, but then we learn later that it's something else. And I also love that, and how we might imagine something as real, but then can completely change our mind just by having a new piece of information.
When you learn it's like a microscopic image of a spore and not the lunar landscape or something.
Yeah.
Well, we both, I mean, I got it right in that it was water, but I didn't see it as frozen water so much. That's interesting. You know, there's a poet, I don't know if you would ever have heard of him, kind of a hermetic poet who recently passed away, named Garrett Lansing. He has a book, it's actually a series of books that he wrote over the years called The Heavenly Tree Grows Downward. And so he's kind of in the mystical, like this mysticism type thing you were talking about. It's worth, I'll share those with you sometime.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah, I will. So go on. Let's hear some
Keep
more.
Keep going.
Yeah.
All right.
I hope you're going to pick some of the poem, some of your own choices too. I mean, it's very kind of you to read the poems I wanted to hear.
Oh, I did bring poems that were my own choices
as well.
Okay,
good, great.
And then, yeah.
I put her on the spot. I asked her to read. I didn't know this at the time, but I asked her to read these poems she had never read before. So.
Well, I read from this book, I guess it was a week and a half ago or something, at the Spotty Dog in the Volume Reading Series.
Mm-hmm.
And so I made an entirely different selection of poems to read.
Fascinating.
And so actually, I want to continue on the arc that initially that you created, because I really enjoy it.
Great.
So I want to do that. And then I will share some of the other ones that I sometimes choose, as well as some newer poems that aren't even in any book yet, as well as one that was published last month in Chronogram. All right, so this poem is called Ballad for Bernadette, and we'll talk about Bernadette after this poem. All right, so Ballad for Bernadette. Babes in the Wood, a ballade of an anti-Puritan, a ballad of suicide, the basis of morality, the bet and other stories, the bird book, the birth, bones, the Book of Eigen, the Book of Repulsive Women, the Boomerang and the New Hebrides, the Boxer Rebellion, a Boy's Will. So this poem is a found poem, and it's a found poem. I was looking up published writings from the early 1800s, and there was a title list of writings then, and they were alphabetical. And when I was looking and I was researching something, that's how I was there. And I don't remember entirely why I was there and what I was researching. I think it had something to do with the suffragettes. And this came out, and I was looking at them and just thinking about them as a collection, and how strange and amazing the collection was. And then it made me think about Bernadette Mayer, who is a poet that I greatly admire and I've had the privilege of working with for, this is my second year working with her. And she's a big proponent of things like found poems and seeing a poem in anything. And so I thought this was really suiting and perfect because she, for me, feels very much in this poem too.
But so these are titles to books?
They're titles to published, poems. No, titles to published writings that were in the early 1900s. And I was like looking on Wikipedia, researching suffragettes, ended up on something or other that then gave me lists. And when I looked at this list, I was just amazed by the titles and the relationships between them.
That's cool. Yeah. But theoretically, I guess we could go back and read them and do cut-ups of them, and there's all kinds of different things you could do.
Yeah.
With that, the title's a good place to start, you know, then within that, playing around. So you were saying you have been working with Bernadette Mayer, mm-hmm. also a friend of mine and a former guest on this program. So tell us about that, because I'm not so sure I was aware of that connection.
I started to work with her last summer. She hosts a workshop group. I've heard it being called before the Porch School. And it's a small group of very eclectic people and ages from different places. And we meet once a month at Bernadette's house. And Bernadette provides a prompt for us to work on through the month. And then we come back together and share our poems. And I was introduced to the opportunity through Karen Schomer, who is also a local author and poet. And Karen was actually our first writer in residence at Instar Lodge. And she, when she applied, she sent in a letter of recommendation from Bernadette. And I am a big fan of Bernadette's. So when Karen had that letter of recommendation, it was an absolute. I didn't have to read anything, even though, of course, I did. And so Karen had been working with her in this way. And so when there was an opening, Karen invited me or somehow...
Into the workshop. Oh, it's like an invitation only.
I don't actually know the real workings.
Some secret coven, you know, like poetry coven. It's a poetry state forest, right? They have, they call that her place.
Yeah, I really do not know the methodology mm-hmm. at all.
You don't get like a secret envelope under the door in the middle of the night?
Some random email.
Oh, okay, that's nice. I mean, mm-hmm. lucky you.
I feel that way.
I mean, Bernadette famously did historic workshops at the Poetry Project in the 70s and 80s, right? Some of the big names in poetry now got their start at the Bernadette. So, very cool. Plus, she's really cool. Quite a, you know, diehard survivor and all. And her company is great. Her mind is so sharp and brilliant, and her, you know, of course, one of her famous earlier works is Memory. But I saw her recently. I think you were at the same event. Her memory is really good. She pulled some things that I was shocked that she could remember from the like early 90s and stuff when we knew each other a little bit. So I mean, it's great. I mean, lucky, right? We need inspirations and. I don't know if you'd want to say mentors, but models, mm-hmm. at least in certain respects. Mm-hmm. I mean, nobody wants to, you don't want to be somebody else, but mm-hmm. you pick and choose, and that's a very fine, you know, and a fine person. And Has she seen the book? Did you
give her? She hasn't seen it yet. I get to see her again this coming month, so I'm going to give her one because I actually have co-dedicated it to her and to my sister, actually. Because, like you say, for me, she has represented the great permission, I suppose, that we sometimes seek in creating or in our work. And
to be experimental.
Yeah.
I mean, she's a big experimentalist.
Yeah, she is. And she's incredibly generous. And I think for someone who has worked that hard in her life and to still remain that generous and that open to people at all different places in their work is really admirable. And she's just not snobby about anything and about poetry. And I think that's incredible. And I think that her mind is still open to what else it can be.
Long may she run and write. And we're lucky to have her. She's close by. You know, it's like really a local poet.
She is. I actually brought some of her poetry also because I thought maybe I would even read one of her poems too.
Fantastic. So, as you please.
Should I segue and read one of hers right now?
Why not?
All right.
We can go back to your book. Yeah. We have some time.
All right. So one of the things about Bernadette is I honestly feel like I could often just pick at random any poem because I love always the wit and the humor that I find in any of her poems, as well as, I don't know, I suppose as well as the simplicity and authenticity of place that is in her poems too. So this morning, thinking about coming to the show, I just went through her book Works and Days and just really chose the first three that caught my attention today. So the first poem that I selected is called The Great Outdoors. I left New York City because it took so long to get out the door. In the city, the streets are your hallways. I am a mole person. I want to transcend growing up in Brooklyn. Now out the door, I can see a creek monster or rainbow. In the woods, I can build things without anybody seeing me. I can make piles of autumn leaves, wood, yarn, snow, and cover them up with a tarp. This poem is called A New Season. It couldn't be more of a mess. Here in slush and ice land, global warming, or something's turned here New York City-ish. When it snows, the finches, on the other handed, rather stay here for winter. Now, they gather under the feeder, and when they all fly away at once, it's spring or something. A new season called Whoosh. And the last poem that I chose of hers today is called Theory of Everything. Doing nothing on the blink, neither here nor there, do you care? Plastic icicle, real icicle, falls. I cycle. Does the sun mean that much? Theory of nothing. The road is white. Alice's house is white. Snowdrops are white. The snow's not enough to sneeze at. Property is robbery. The car's on the blink. I'd like to be under the sea. I really like that one.
Look at the little Beatles quote in there, mm-hmm. right? Interesting. So I know you're from Martha's Vineyard. And that's interesting to me because I grew up right across the waterway from there in Falmouth. But with this I'm getting to the Bernadette poem. The first one, she talks about leaving the city. Now, did you used to live in the city before you came up to Hudson? There's some lapses in my knowledge of your bio.
I did. I lived in the city for 6 years. So I lived in the city from... I guess it was six, around 21 until about 26, so somewhere, give or take, 6 or 7 years maybe. And then I moved to Hudson, and I lived in Hudson again for give or take 6 years. I have to actually look at my own timeline here. And then I moved to Germantown. So I have been upstate now, living
while.
Yeah, and living full time now for about like somewhere around 16 years.
Great.
Yeah.
So do you think that the first poem you read resonates with you in a way, because you can now you have your backyard and outdoor studio and what have you, and you can do things and play, and people, you know, you don't have to deal with the kinds of things you deal with in Brooklyn or wherever you were?
Yeah, I do. And I think that, you know, in all of those poems, they feel very place-based and really specific to being here and being here in the winters and the Hudson Valley, and looking through that lens of weather that we experience. And so, yeah, I do. And I think, too, that our identities are shaped by our landscapes as well. And so the parts of ourselves that change, or the parts of ourselves that have been, I don't want to say lost, but move further away from.
Well, you're not the only one who's moved up here from the city, right? So a lot, I think, and all of us who have done that get it. You know, get that. I mean, how many people do you know who move up here and then move back? I mean, I have.
Actually, I know one person who's doing that right now, and it's a bit of a shocker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's not. I mean, I don't think anywhere you go, there's difficulty and the potential of suffering and bad stuff happens. But, you know, so I wouldn't say, you know, you're in some sort of automatic comfort zone by being in the Hudson Valley or what have you. But there are a lot less details and difficulties, street friction, noise. I can, you know, the list goes on and on of ways in which things change once you get north of, like, say, the Tappan Zee Bridge or some place. I don't know where the Hudson Valley begins, somewhere down there. So anyway, it's interesting to me. And so you have your own kind of arc. You're off on a, you start on an island, you get your urban fix, and now, I mean, you're doing your thing here, and you seem to be thriving. Mm-hmm. Right, you have all this. I mean, and not to mention, you have access to great artists and writers, access to the city. I mean, that's one of the true benefits of this area. So we have that, you know, train ride away. You're, you know, downtown New York, and you can go see the world, as they like to tell you. So that's, I like that. I mean, thanks for reading Bernadette's poems. I'm not familiar with that book, and you know, those selections were, they spoke.
Yeah, I think, I'm trying to think, when did she publish this? Because I feel like this is a new book. This might be her most recent book that, let's see, when did it come out? Yeah, 2016. Yeah, and you know what you were saying about the New York to coming up here, and I actually didn't start creating in the way that I have been for these last 10, 15 years until I moved up here. And so it's interesting, because I think there's a lot of mythology for artists to need, quote unquote, to be in the city. And I actually, as an artist, needed to be out of the city, because I needed the expansiveness, literally, of the sky, to open my own possibilities up. And I think that there's so much possibility upstate, but I also believe that a lot of it you need to forge and create. So
I think you're doing it
different. Yeah, it's maybe a different kind of creating, where you might need to be a bit more of a leader to do it, or an instigator. And at the same time, there's definitely a growing tribe, a huge, incredible, you know, community of artists here.
Well, but maybe this gives a chance, before we go back to a couple more or a few more poems, to talk about Instar Lodge, because that's how I met you, as a matter of fact, through your work in Germantown and exhibiting work and having residency programs and little parties and gatherings. So maybe talk about the status of that.
Sure.
And what you're, you know, it seems as though there isn't quite as much happening there, and I understand that there's some reason for that, or no?
No. So, yeah, Instar Lodge I started in 2016, and so I was able to start it through creating a framework for myself as seeing it as an art project, first and foremost, and not necessarily knowing what it would definitely be, but I knew that I wanted to start a space that could provide more opportunities for creativity to flourish and happen in the space, and for a space of both exhibiting or sharing the work, but also my real interest is oftentimes in the making of the work. And so I opened that in 2016, and it's in a former Odd Fellows Hall in Germantown, New York. And I started it with like a really felt like a huge surge of energy. And you're right, we did a lot of exhibits and events, and we published, and we just had things going like all the time in the first year. And when I say we, it's very small. It's pretty much a me ship, along with a really wonderful group of advisors and volunteer support. So I currently have an amazing young woman named Rebecca Cosenza, who works regularly with me. So we're pretty much like doing the work. And after a year, we had the opportunity to kind of pull back and look and see what we had done, and then think about what it's, you know, like that opportunity to say, okay, so this is an art project, and here we are in the middle of a process. It's not become itself yet. It's becoming. And what do we want to do next? And I personally was, one, pretty exhausted from all of the production of the giant events, but also realizing that where I, again, personally am most interested in is generally in the conversation and in the process of making. And I also recognized after that year that there are also so many wonderful institutions and organizations up here in the Hudson Valley that are doing many, many great things. And, you know, it doesn't mean there's not plenty more room for more and more, but it also kind of gave me pause to pull back and say, okay, well, like, what else can we do that is a little different and also feeds me creatively in other ways? And so for me, that was really like, okay, let's focus more in on the community conversations. Let's focus in on the process of creating, inviting more people into the identity of an artist. And so our programming became a lot quieter, in the sense that it was happening more in-house in these ways, in workshops and in conversations. And then our conversation series, which is also based on our reading series, which is based on our library that we have at the space, became a roving conversation. So what we do is now we host a monthly conversation in place, and we're exploring the topic of place through different topics, like smaller topics every month, and it's framed by the authors that we are reflecting on as well, and the actual location and its relationship to the organization that we might be partnering with. For example, just this weekend we did our conversation on Wonderment at the home estate of John Burroughs at his Woodchuck Lodge out in Roxbury, New York, and it was incredible because we had people from this neck of the woods going all the way out to that area of the Hudson Valley. And it was just, it was I don't know how to not use the word wonderment and wonderful and of wonder all, because it really was that experience of being in wonderment. And, so yeah.
Right. So, but the community in Germantown is receptive to what you're doing with Instar. It wasn't some sort of, there was no resistance to that. That's good. Because I don't know anything sometimes, but I was worried that all of a sudden there was, you know, you were worried about stuff happening. No? Good. You never know. In Germantown, I just read that there, this whole thing about the Dollar General, that doesn't seem so positive, but...
Yeah.
I think, can Instar Lodge and the Dollar General serve, you know?
I think that, you know, I don't know how to sort of safely even talk about that. I think there's a lot of strife and concerns around what a community is and who is and who isn't a part of that. And I do feel that for the most part, our place is very receptive to the ideas of what InStar Lodge represents and what we're doing and who we're doing it with. And we're very, you know, we're generous. Like, there's pretty much most of the programming is free, and we're very generous. I think with the Dollar General, that's a really big and interesting conversation, and it is one that I want to have, and I plan to write probably a letter about it, because I think it's complicated, and it's more complicated than just the actual business that's moving in there. I think right. It actually comes down to how a community plans, how things are designed. I think, I also think that, you know, there is a person who sold this land and a person that is part of this community. And I think that I'll just say that I think that that person has gone through a lot of strife because of people's unhappiness around the Dollar General. And I think we always need to think bigger and more collectively. And I guess what I see as this as the problem is it isn't collective. Mm. It isn't collective representation and support as a whole.
Well, let me just say that here's hoping to see more programming at InStar Lodge, because everything I've been to, all the exhibits, fantastic. Yeah. You know, so and we also, I would get personally in trouble if we didn't talk about your work at Olana as well. I mean, maybe we should read some poems. And yeah. Do you have any way to?
Yeah, let's do that. I also want to, before I give up the mic on InStar Lodge, I also want to say and invite to the community at large, extending beyond Germantown, to join us and to also offer like workshops and curate projects, because we have this really magnificent space and it's meant and designed to be used and shared. And so I always really welcome and want more people to step into it and find ways to create with it.
So. And it's the best way to get in touch with you through a website. Yeah. Is there a URL?
Yeah.
Do you have?
It's just instarlodge.com.
Instarlodge.com. Mm-hmm. And do you have a Facebook page and all that as well?
We do, but you know, our Facebook is dusty. We are hardcore Instagram users.
All right. That's good to know. All right. Yeah. Everybody catch that. Very good. So I'm mentioned just to you as we were getting ready to do the show, I mean, I'm so impressed that, you know, you do visual. I mean, I first knew you basically through the visual arts. You've got the community, you know, conversation, a community, I would say, activism, mm-hmm. Going, and now your poems. So,
Chris, I've got more going.
You've got more going. I know. But this thing at Olana was so, like, so innovative. Yeah. And with the, I mean, it's an interactive, geolocative, you know, installation at the, you know, the great historic site above the Hudson. Mm-hmm. I'm not even sure how it came into being. Maybe, and it is very, to me, it's a very poetic project. Yeah. I'm not doing some sort of promo here, but all of a sudden anyone's response to the landscape and to whatever they're thinking, whatever their reflections are, mm-hmm. can be collectively, are being collectively gathered and are accessible to all. Yeah.
Right. So I'll talk about that actually for a minute, because it's actually a long project at this point. I started that project before InStar Lodge. And so that project started for me thinking about, one of the things I'm always thinking about is how to connect people to their identity as an artist, because I have a belief that everyone is an artist, because I believe that art is creativity and it's innate in us. And I'm also really interested in our connections in nature and our connections in solitude to self, but then how oftentimes these things that we feel are private are shared experiences. And I think that there's something really beautiful when we see ourselves and others. So I had done a project before this called The Art of Worth, And that was, I guess, where some of this thinking too was seated. And so I wanted to take the projects and this type of practice with others to sort of the next level. And so I thought about Olana as a site to possibly conceive of this mapping project. So the project is called Wayfinding Imagery, Imaging History with Our Story. And the project asks individuals to basically note their individual sensory experiences in nature and then share them, uploading them through, like you were saying, through an app that tags where you are in place and then goes on to a more collective mapping piece, so that eventually you can look at the trails of Olana and see what everyone else is seeing. And then this becomes to me also a relationship to citizen science and also to history. And I started thinking about wayfinding itself and the history of the Polynesian wayfinders and how historically we would be able to see the signs in nature as without needing maps, and how that's really been changed. And all that we do now is rely on our digital maps to help us get anywhere that we're going. And also thinking about how the digital interface has in some ways distanced us from nature. But I was imagining, could it bring us back to nature through an invitation that was contemporary? And then all of that too, thinking about Frederick Church and during the time that he was creating art and the Industrial Revolution and sort of similar concerns around the environment and the impact of the beauty that was being cut down and commodified. So I felt like there is a shared lineage in time right now with him and his place. And then again, thinking about what is the role of the artist and who is the artist. And I wondered if the public could be the artist walking quite literally in his footsteps. So that's really the framework of the project. And it's interesting because it's, in my mind, a lot of thinking, but a very, excuse me, simple project because it's almost just again, it goes to what I was saying about perspective. It's just an invitation to stop and see something perhaps in a different way, and then what that can do and change.
And are people still responding to it? I mean, do you check how often do you look at the results?
Well, if I answer it honestly, I'm really busy right now.
Okay. It sounds
so
like it.
So I am not checking it on a daily basis.
That's who would expect that.
But people are still participating. And this year is exciting because last year was the pilot launch of the program or of the project. And this year it's expanded. Been expanded right, and iterated right. on to right. include the entire campus, or I'm not sure what you would say, the entire landscape grounds of Olana. And so, in fact, today I got an email that the guidebook that we designed and published as part of this project will be printed probably this week and available at Olana. So the larger application and way of participating is about to begin.
Everybody should go there and get the brochure and take a nice hike, walk your dog, whatever it is, and then you'll be part of Dawn's and others, the collaborative, collective piece.
Yeah.
Very cool, very cool. Well, we have a few more minutes, maybe 10 more minutes. Why don't we finish off with some more of your poems? I know you brought a few things that you read. We're just actually read as many poems as you want.
All right. All right. This poem is called Awake. A swell this morning, a whale sound, salty rolling crests and crescendos. The birds work hard, cracking the sky, snapping dreams awake. It's no mistake, awake means what it does. Birds are mourning, a ship that passed slain by the sun. And this is a really small poem that I like, called Morning Mug. Handmade mini mug, swollen as pregnant two lips, fill with reverie. And I'll read one more poem from this book, and then I'm going to read three other poems that are not in this book. So
that's a haiku, I guess.
It is a haiku. All right, excellent. It is a haiku. So you probably noticed that I don't use very many forms per se in my poems, but that one is a haiku. This one is called Fossils. Trauma-wedged memories, impressions of death. Ice melts in irregular patterns. Ivy creeps, leaking, crawling into the home. Later discovered pockets of mold, without linear reason. In ways we don't see, blizzards haunt structures. Homes need rebuilding. Worn years of patch and paint, materials saved to be reshaped, reused, recycled, or burnt. Use the charcoal to draw the landscape. The future home. In the dream, the home is you. You can put your hands to the wall and listen for the story. Rocks are harder to read. The stone cold feel. Millions of lies cementized. A home can be built by hand, with field stone and feldspar. The match lights lamps without fear. It's heavy work building a castle, even in the mind, when the home burns down. Mm. All right, so this poem is titled Syria, and this one was in Chronogram last month. If you were raised on vegetables only, would you grow up and eat veal? Do veterans get into heaven? Is there a side gate for suiciders? Core and corpse sound the same. It's hard to stomach steak with nightly news. Oh, Syria, you stink of sizzled flesh and smoky flavor. We drink white wine. Is there water there? We poison our children with water here. Legionnaires and lead flood Flint, a brown town treated with bleach. I can't imagine sacrificing a kid. I eat goat stew, though, with turnips that taste like dirt. Syria, will you save us from ourselves? Strike our evil away. I should have probably saved that one for last because it's hard to read after that one.
It's heavy, but it makes us all confront our privilege.
Yeah. That one, I actually want to say, was a prompt by Bernadette because she asked us to write about Syria. And she did so saying that one of her beliefs as a poet is that a poem can change many things and many things that we might not even recognize or ever know. And so she was like, so you may as well write a poem about Syria. So it was a great experience because it was a great experience to research Syria and recognize how little I knew and still how little I know. And then, to engage with it in that way. And I think as an artist, just taking up those questions sometimes, even if you have no direct interest in something, can really be powerful. Mm. And I really appreciated that experience. And then this poem prompted an art piece that I made, and I had a solo exhibit also in June at the Ree Institute in Millerton. And I made a piece of work that was related to this poem, and that piece of work also included making medicine out of ground ivy, and that is a medicine that actually removes lead from your blood system. Mm. And so I was able to invite the community into that making process, and we've made a lot of medicine, and we're actually sending it to Flint because there are herbalists there that are collecting it to treat people in Flint.
Great. Awesome.
Yeah, it was cool. All right, so this poem is my most recent poem, and it's called Ode to Too Much. By the way, I printed out a copy for you if you want to read along sometimes.
Okay,
there
great.
There you go. All right. A list of to-dos too much. Research, look up and down, words and town. A need to get him and her such and such. Figure out the boat, don't hear the sounds. You're steering, grab the clutch. Emails in and out, words whirl around. Give away what you can't touch. Hurry now, you hear the hounds. Sea salt spray on sun-turned face. Time to do nothing more but die. sublime this sail, this ocean place. Languid light, pick mulberries for pie. Write poems, never write, never erase. Breezes tickle low below wide sky. Move slowly ahead, a fearless pace. This peace, heaven's sigh. A message appears bearing news. A bare naked father institutionalized.
Whoa. I didn't see the end of that one coming.
Yeah. Well, was kind of the amazing part of using this form.
Mm.
Well, the form is kind of interesting. I mean, when I was reading about it, it was describing it as a really old Greek form, and that it would have been traditionally sung, and that there would be two sides of an argument, basically, that would be sung. So one side would come out and sing, and then the other side would come out and sing, the opposing or something. And then at the end, a narrator or so would break that with however they wanted to break it. And and then, of course, there was like some rhyming rules and stuff like that. But that was the form. And this also came from a prompt as well. And it worked out really well. I liked it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It's a little bit like the pantoum without the moderator at the end. I mean, the pantoum also is a rhyming scheme. The lyrical value in this, definitely by the second stanza, is there. I mean, so you got that? Absolutely.
It was fun, and it was a challenge because I don't, like I said earlier, I don't usually think first by form at all.
Mm. Good.
Yeah. Oh, I'm glad
who,
to hear
who
that.
Does?
I don't know.
It's not
the
19th, 18th century
I
anymore.
I feel like
it's
I guess that I have this, you know how we have things that are over our heads talking to us, and I think one that's over my head talking to me is always that you're doing it wrong. And then the next part of that is like, whatever I'm not doing, I should be doing. So if I'm not thinking about the form first, then that person on top of my head is saying, you should think about the form.
But by now, you should do whatever comes,
yeah.
I think. And there are people who are devoted to this kind of structural thinking. And then there's the rest of us.
Yeah.
You know, like, and that's one of the things that was so liberating, I would say, for poets come the modern era, literally the modern era, capital M. You know, we don't have to do it that way anymore. Still, there has to be some, you know, qualities to the language, and it has to be, engaging and everything, but that doesn't necessarily have to follow metrical. I mean, it's amazing when you see someone who's passionate about that and they do it well. I am always awestruck by that.
Mm-hmm.
However, come on, right? There's a lot of different ways to say what you need to say. So I have no problem with that. Some of my, occasionally, I mean, rhyme has a reason. It served a purpose, serves a purpose still. And when I hear as an avant-garde writer or innovative, someone who's known as being an innovator, use rhyme effectively, I still like it.
Mm.
But of course, it's not all going to be rhymes. And, so there's still ways you can use structure and form like on a minor scale rather than like the be all end all to the work. So cool.
So this poem is called Armoria. Before Memorial Day was Decoration Day, decorating stones and rocks with dead flowers like sea thrift. Now lilacs parade in little hands, floating by toward a promenade, glissade, glissade, to be thrown in the sea. Purple hearts beat the ocean. One by one, plop, plop, bleeding they go. My memory of this day, pas de deux, throwing beauty away. Should I read one more? Or what's our time like?
Yeah, please do.
Okay.
Please, I mean, if you have one that you want to finish with, we're almost there.
All right, so I'll read this poem last. It's called Sailing.
It's
from the book.
It's from Dawn's new book, just out, and you can get this book at Spotty Dog and there are other places.
Yeah, so locally it's at the Spotty Dog in Hudson, New York, and in Germantown it's at Alder & Company.
Right. Breath 40 Times.
Yep.
Dawn Bree is on Poet Radio at WGXC. Thanks so much for being on the program, Dawn.
Thanks so much for having me,
right.
Chris.
Good to hear the poems.
All right, Sailing. A yard sale of my crumb trail. Take it away, past be gone, the wandering, lost bygone. Take it away, the broken habit, dish, clock, missing time, worn out shine. I want nothing now but space-time, a wandering hand. Light, starshine, a sky sail glider, nothing waiting me. Dark whales below, passed by, freely I let go. Gave it up and away, floating now, the wind chose me.